and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Henrik here with Red Eyes. Thank you so much for being here, everybody. If you're joining us on YouTube or maybe some of the other channels that we are on, perhaps you're joining us at redeyesmembers.com as well, our exclusive members website that we have for all our subscribers and fans and supporters out there. Thank you for joining us today regardless. We have a new guest on the show. He's not been with us before, Devin from blackpilled.com. Good to have you with us, Devin. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I like the show. So it's great to be on here.
You bet. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. So for newcomers to your work, tell us a little bit when you got started. Tell us about, I guess, the name, the choice. Are you a black-pilled person?
Well, it's kind of funny. So I started doing videos during the election, and it was more of I wanted Hillary to lose more than I wanted Trump to win. My politics, especially, it's evolved a little bit, but like, especially at the time, it was best described as anti-left. And I just knew what a disaster it would be if Hillary got elected. So I don't know if you remember the 3D dancing Pepe videos and stuff. Like that was my first couple of videos I did. The InfoWars played them. They went out like a PJW ripped off one of my videos.
What is it with that guy? He always steals stuff, and then he never credits the people doing
never.
And he just like, I don't know, not one of these. I mean, he does some good things here and there, and I appreciate that he gets the message out about some kind of basic tier, like, you know, going after the libs kind of stuff. But
right.
He just seems like a kind of a narcissist and an asshole, to be honest. You know,
he's. I think he's good overall. You know, like definitely he steals memes.
Yes, he does. He's a thief. A shameless thief.
Well, I think though a lot of these guys, these I don't know what you'd want to call them, the more commercial side of the right.
If you're a little bit nasty, you'd call them toxic e celebs, right? or e merchants, maybe is a better term.
Well, and that's the thing. They're all about numbers. That you know, especially when they were still on. They're not on YouTube now, but I mean, they've got to be hurting now over at InfoWars. But
PJW still is, though. He has his own little channel there still. Yeah, he has his own, and they're trying to boot him off, but he's still on YouTube.
He actually
he's still
has
on
a
Twitter.
Lot of subscribers. He's got like over a million. Might even be like up to 2 million now. But
yeah.
I mean, he reaches a lot of people. You know, he seems like a nice guy. But yeah, he definitely steals memes. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how I got started. Honestly, I don't mind because honestly, that's kind of what launched my channel in some ways was a lot of people saw my work because of that. And I feel like InfoWars kind of has been like a springboard for a lot of people. So, I mean, not so much now, but like, especially during the election and stuff like that. So, I know people have problems with them and I understand that, but. Overall, I feel like they're a net positive, or at least, you know, now I don't know really how much of an impact they're having. I don't know what their numbers look like, but definitely during the election, they were a net positive. Very
absolutely. No, absolutely. I agree with that. I'm not for, you know, kind of attacking anybody or just, you know, usually I just stay out of that and stuff like that. But he's, you know, just Paul Joseph Watson in general has been, he kind of deserves some of the shit he's getting because he seems like just a cocky bastard. You know what I mean? And just like no humility whatsoever. And this aspect too, if he just credited people he took stuff from, it was like, it would be better, you know, but he's like, seems like he's a prick, you know? So anyway, regardless, personality flaws to the side, I'm glad he's there. I'm glad he's doing what he's doing, and including even Tranny watching Alex Jones. it's like these shock, you know, levels to what is revealed throughout the years, I guess, as you learn more and more. But all those flaws to the side, I'm still happy that they're there, and for the sake of free speech, it's vital that they remain being there, which is the big shocker in terms of how YouTube has treated Jones and Facebook and Twitter, and you know the story, of course, what's happened there.
Right. Well, and they're going to use that. Obviously, that was a test case. They're going to use that to remove more of us. I mean, just right before we went on here, I got an email from YouTube saying that they age restricted one of my latest videos. It's the tribalism of the ruling class. And there's nothing violent in it. There's no profanity. There's no nudity. The only thing I could think of, if I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, which I don't want to do, but if I am, there's like footage of cattle, and so maybe they thought it was a slaughterhouse, but they're not getting slaughtered or anything, you know. And in fact, it's not even a slaughterhouse; it's like where they milk the cows or whatever. So, I don't know why, like, I honestly don't know how it could have been picked up by an algorithm. It would have had to have been, like, reported and done manually, I think. And, but, you know, that's just kind of what, especially with this video. So they do this with a lot of my videos. What they'll do is I'll release a video and they will, first thing they'll do is demonetize it, but they wait until it gets maybe like 100 views where it doesn't really matter. And then they demonetize it. And so you send in the appeal to try to get the monetization back. And they wait around usually for like at least 24 hours. And so by that time, all of your subscribers have watched the video. It's, you know, the rush is gone.
It's over at that point.
Starting to trickle down. And then they'll put the ads on because there was no reason to demonetize it in the first place. And, you know, they want to act like, oh, we didn't do anything. And so they put the ads on, but by that point, you've already missed out on like 30,000-40,000 views, which is significant if it's happening to every single one of your videos. And then in this case, they put the ads back on, and then, you know, 5,000 views later, oh, it's adults only, no ads, you know. And there's really no reason for it. There's absolutely no reason for it. I even went back and watched it to make sure. I was like, did I swear or did I do anything that they could have used as an excuse? And I didn't see one. So I sent another appeal in, and, you know, it'll probably go nowhere. But
yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we've been demonetized for a couple of years now, I think. We basically cannot. We can still request a manual review, but we've never enabled the monetization. Thankfully, we never got dependent on that system, right, if you will. So that's a plus for us. But it's still, of course, very annoying because I mentioned this before. Everyone who is on YouTube, and especially for political YouTube, right? What you want to do is you want to be able to, as a creator, put in as much time and effort and energy and resources as possible, right? You can continue to produce good content. And here's where the symbiotic relationship with YouTube comes into the picture, right? That, you know, you produce good content, they get ads, and they get money from that. You know, they make money on us being creators. All I want to say is that the uneven playing field, that everyone who's politically on the right, more or less, are in some way limited or banned or censored, right, or blocked, or the ad apocalypse have affected them. And so we can't even like compete on an equal playing field with most of the left out there, political leftists, you know?
Well, and if they were being honest and if they were just worried about, oh, it's controversial and we don't want to show ads to a creator that's making people pissed off. All right. Well, then look at the thumbs up versus thumbs down ratio. Clearly the people that are watching my videos are vastly, like, you know, the video you're showing now, like 50 people didn't like it and 5,000 or almost 6,000 people did. So clearly my viewers are not angry about my content and would be happy to see an ad. So it's really frustrating because, you know, it's 100% just censoring the right. And the proof of that is there's horrible, horrible content on the left that stays monetized. There was that music video, that rapper, I don't remember his name.
The French one, Conrad, was that the one you're thinking about? Or?
Well, that one's bad too, but I just mean the one where
a lot of bad stuff.
There was this huge, it's one of the biggest videos on YouTube in the last few months.
Like was it the Tenation or something with 3XXX at the end or something? The guy who was killed, he was hanging a white baby, was it, or something?
Well, he kills a bunch. I mean, the video I saw a long time ago, he guns down.
Oh, yeah,
down,
the
like,
Gambino, childish Gambino.
Go.
That's right.
That was
yeah.
the one. But, I mean, that's like he's gunning down people, execution-style murdering people, and that's totally legit. That's totally cool. But, you know, you say something about the ruling class or say anything about corruption in government, and all of a sudden, you know, can't do that. So it's really frustrating.
I'm even afraid of playing a little bit part of it, because then they'll think the violence is me doing this, right? So now they can censor me. But, yeah, you're right. There's a portion here on... you just shoot somebody right there.
Right in the back of the head.
Blood and everything.
No big deal.
No, but this is art, you see. This is beautiful, creative, and it's political art, which critiques our society, so it's okay.
And the funny thing is, his like-to-dislike ratio is way worse than mine on my video. He's got 500,000-plus people that didn't like that. And so, I mean, if they were being honest at all about trying to be advertiser-friendly, as the way they try to frame it, then the metrics that they're using don't make any sense. So it's clearly about censorship. There's no question about it, and it's really frustrating. I mean, I think it's cool that what you guys have done with your the premium content and stuff like that. I think that's what a lot of people are going to end up having to do, just because, I mean, obviously there's Patreon, but even Patreon's kicking people off. I mean, you guys just lost
one, right? Look at a bunch of, like...
Yeah, he did a whole group of people.
A whole row of them, yep.
Massacre, and no big deal.
Nope.
I probably think he kills a cop at some point. I mean, it's... The whole thing is just gun violence, but no big deal.
Nope.
Because he's got... Honestly, it's because if... What YouTube wants to be, a replacement of cable television. So they want to suck up to any record label or any, I mean, when they did that grant money, where they gave money to companies like CNN to create news content on YouTube, it's like, really? You're giving grant money to billionaires, essentially. I mean, it's like the corporate welfare kind of a thing, only it's all being conducted privately, I guess. But it's really frustrating, especially because there's not really any big competitors. I mean, there's BitChute, and I do have a BitChute channel. And BitChute's pretty awesome in that, you know, it automatically, you know, puts your videos on BitChute when you publish to YouTube, but there's no ad revenue coming from that. Maybe there will be eventually, but I doubt there will be, because you have these companies that would enable them to monetize ads. Like, their payment processors are cutting companies like BitChute off. So we're in this weird position where we almost have to start using our own freaking currency, you know? Like, and maybe that's what it'll be. Maybe we'll start using some kind of cryptocurrency or something like that to get out of this. But it's really... they've really got us on every angle, and there's no right wing billionaire that's stepping up to create any kind of competitor, because quite frankly, the new right or the dissident right or whatever you want to call us, there's no billionaire on our side, because we're sort of against them. You know?
Yeah.
We're undermining them. And so the last thing they're going to want to do is give us a platform. You know, the whole left-right paradigm in Washington is mostly for show. So
I guess what I'm seeing there a little bit too, Devin, is that it, in a way it's kind of good, because it makes us kind of tougher and stronger. We're forced to not only develop a thicker skin, but we're forced to be smarter than they are, right, and outsmart them. It's an constant uphill battle for us, and we know that, of course, it's under hard pressure and those conditions that you create really sharp and individuals that are able to kind of pierce through all of these, all the restrictions and all the difficulty that we face, basically. While for them it's a downhill battle. It's smooth, it's easy, it's not, you know, they don't have any opposition and stuff like that. And that's why I think we're, many regards, we're winning in terms of the arguments. We're winning in terms of reaching people on a level of what seems more, makes more sense, you know, so I think that that's one of the reasons to why they have to treat us in this manner, that they don't want us on an equal playing field within the ability to communicate with people and debate and argue, because that's the only thing they have left. The only thing they have left is to shut us down, you know?
Well, and not only is it pushing us to be better and to do, explore other options, a lot of creators are doing books. Like, I did my book recently.
We'll talk about that later, by the way. Yeah.
More books in the future. But, you know, you're forced to do other content. But in addition to that, you got to think about these companies, what they're doing. They're doing the SJW diversity hiring. So there's got to be, if you're only hiring people, if Silicon Valley, and we know this is happening, if Silicon Valley is only hiring people based on these SJW requirements and has nothing to do with performance, there's going to be a massive brain drain happening at Google, happening at Facebook, happening at all these companies. So at the same time that they're pushing us to essentially evolve, they're going to be devolving. So we have a chance to win this. I don't know that we will. I mean, you asked me about why I named it Blackpilled. I am kind of blackpilled in terms of long term, I think that we're going to survive. Our culture will survive in one way or another. But I'm more, the name is more, I'm blackpilled about the, uh, the country existing. I don't think the United States is going to exist in the form that it does now. Maybe not even in my, I think in my lifetime, I'm going to see it kind of come apart. So, that's kind of where the black pill, I guess, comes in for me.
Sure thing. Yeah, this is, I was reminding of this story here. There was a Facebook engineer. Just to pick up on your point, that I do believe more and more people will end up quitting because they just won't be able to stand the. I mean, in a way, that's bad, right? Because we actually want people like that still within the company that can push and put up opposition. But I frankly don't know if that's how we're going to win. So I think it's almost, I'm just saying in terms of like the liberal bias within these companies and the censorship. So it's better to maybe just kind of try to expose them as much as possible so that they kind of destroy their own companies and people simply just walk away from it. I mean, Facebook is like boomers mostly that are on there these days. Is any of the cool kids on there anymore? You know?
Yeah, no, exactly. I haven't used Facebook in, years now. I mean, I have a Facebook page for Blackpilled and I go on and post new videos, but I mean, I barely get any traction. It's just, you need to have, I have an account on every platform I can to try to spread the videos out. But as far as actively using it, I mean, like you said, I think it's mostly boomers. And a lot of their numbers are probably inflated. I know, like, Cernovich is suing Facebook because they are lying about their video numbers. So they are, like, vastly inflating the video numbers. So if you're investing a lot of money and trying to get a product or even if it's just like nonprofits trying to spread their propaganda on their platform, and you think that, you're getting 1 million views and you're really getting 100,000 views, that's kind of a big deal. You're investing all this money with the expectation that people are seeing these advertisements or your propaganda and I don't remember all the details exactly how bad it was, but it's bad. Like, it was something like inflating the views by like 900%. Like, it was like not a small glitch. And it was, at least the lawsuit is alleging that, it was intentional. That they knew about this and they were lying to, the people paying for the ad. So that's going to be a problem. And honestly, I'm not that surprised because not only do you get the brain drain at these companies from hiring all these SJWs, but come on, let's face it. These guys are not exactly pillars of morality and ethics. So if those are the kind of people running your companies, you're going to have them doing stupid things and they're going to be doing unethical things. And you put those together and I don't know how they continue. And at the same time, the market was already kind of saturated. I think there's going to be a dot-com boom 2.0, quite frankly, because you've got, I mean, Twitter has never made money, like never. It's never made money. It's never turned a profit. But that's the thing that drives me crazy, too, when you hear people like, oh, it's a free market, they can do what they want. They can censor you if you want. Just make your own Twitter. Okay, well, that's great and all, but Twitter has been losing hundreds of millions of dollars for over a decade. And so maybe you've got hundreds of millions of dollars that you can lose every single year for 10 years straight, but most likely you don't. And so it's not as simple as just, oh, I'm going to make my own Twitter. And, Gab's out there, of course, and I use Gab and try to use it as much as possible. But, you need to get, if you want normies on your platform, you have to do what Twitter did, and you have to just start paying people like celebrities and stuff to have accounts. And, they're not going to do that on Gab. And so it's really hard to compete with these companies that are just dumping hundreds of millions of dollars down the toilet because they're, at the end of the day, really, that's not what they're not trying to make a profit. They're trying to brainwash the public.
Absolutely. And I think, I wonder about how much these companies are more about the data acquirement, if you will, the behavioral studies you see most of these kind of organizations that are like, monitoring their right wing or whatever, you see these reports come out regularly. There was another one just a few days ago. Vox Pol, I think it was. Yeah, Vox Pol, a European company. They had basically done this kind of, in a way it's lazy because it's just, they're just using Twitter and try to like find correlating tweets and who's interacting with who's kind of, it's almost like the AIN, the Alternative Influence Network report for Twitter, you know what I mean? Instead of looking at YouTube. But there are stories like this, of course, where we do have, you know, I know that Twitter is international, but it is an American company. It's founded in America. And there's certainly other nationalities to worry about than Saudi Arabia. But it's an interesting side note to every one of those that are interested in meddling in elections and manipulation and stuff like that, that you have Saudi Prince Al-Waed being the biggest investor in Twitter, right? And what is that data being used for? How can they use this to maybe influence at the end of the day America and the American elections and stuff like that? I think that all these questions need to be asked, you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing is the left acts like they're so concerned about foreign influence on our elections, but you do have these big investments, and it's not just in Twitter. I mean, you have these big foreign investments in Twitter and in you know Facebook and Google. And, you know, Google, for example, that they don't want to lose China as a client. I mean, you got to think about that. When they're a huge, huge country with access to all these millions and millions and millions of users. And the first chance they got to censor the speech of the people in China, they're like, yeah, sure, no problem. In fact, we'll use that technology to implement in America.
That's right.
So yeah. These people are not. They're not ethical people. It's like I said before, you have SJWs with hundreds of millions of dollars at their fingertips, and it's scary. And, it's hard to combat. You know, Trump talked about how, oh, we need to have some investigations, but I mean, I haven't seen any yet. We had that one joke of a hearing with Jack Dorsey where you could tell that none of the Republicans, I think there was one guy, I forget who he was, that actually asked like three relevant questions. And the rest of the people were just a bunch of either dumb boomers that didn't know what the hell they were even talking about. Or
they gave him a free pass, man. It was like no hard questions. It was Sheryl Sandberg was there as well from Facebook. And did you know that the Google guy from or Alphabet, as the main company is called now, owns Google? He was meant to be there as well, but they didn't actually send anybody. They just flaked out in the last minute.
It just didn't show. Yeah, because, you know, when Congress asked me to go to testify, I could just be like, no thanks, and it would be totally cool, right? Yeah, that's the problem is these people are so, I mean, reliant on money from these companies. And not only that, can you imagine, I mean, how afraid would you be? Let's say you're a senator or you're just running for office. And you piss off Google, I mean, you realize how much power they have in elections. We've already seen little glimpses of it here and there, and I'm sure there's a lot more going on behind the scenes that we don't see. And the last person you're going to want to piss off is the person who controls all the information of the people that are going to be voting for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's that, and some of it is cowardice on the part of these people, but a lot of it's just collusion, you know, like they accept the bribe. Google has, I mean, endless amounts of lobbying power. In fact, they fund, I was watching, Dave Rubin was interviewing Tucker Carlson, and they mentioned, that Google funds the antitrust, the big antitrust think tank in Washington. Like the so-called watchdog of monopolies is funded by one of the biggest monopolies in human history.
That is crazy. That is crazy. Oh. Devin, before we talk more about, you know, censorship, this is a really, you know, important discussion to have, and I'm glad that we got into this and brought this up. But I do want to talk a little bit about some of the current events here and kind of give people an update on what's been happening with the pipe bombs. I just think that this was it's just so unbelievably convenient. The timing on this, I don't know if this is an October surprise, but it is interesting that, of course, every bomb that was sent was to prominent Democrats that had been critical of Trump or media companies, CNN, of course, specifically. And I include that guy there, by the way, because the supposed ISIS flag on the bomb was actually, there's something. There's you can see it down there in the very middle corner, right? That's how you're familiar with the ISIS flag, for those watching the video version. The next flag is going to come up, but there's a variation of that, which is what is it? I've never seen the guy, but he's some comedian. Get her down there. You can see it. That's the flag I was going to get her down. That's apparently the flag that was on the actual device. That's an interesting side note. But what do you make of all of this and the people that it was sent to, the convenience of basically, as we know, the victim is always the one actually scoring the points in this.
Definitely whoever sent it was a boomer, because I don't think Larry the Cable Guy or Get Her Done
Get Her Done
to anyone like below the age of 40, actually. So, you know, but there, it's obviously, here's the thing. They're fake bombs. I went over that. Like, as soon as I saw those photos,
they're very serious packages.
And that thing, it's like they made them to look like if I was making a student film and I didn't have any money for props, but I needed like a prop to be obvious on camera, like you saw this and you knew it was a bomb. You know, that's what I would make. And the same thing with the envelope. It's like the most suspicious looking package I've ever seen in my life. And so, first of all, even if the bombs were real, which I'm almost 1,000% sure that they're not, if they were real, they didn't mean for them to go off, because first of all, they used timers, which someone has looked up on Amazon, and that timer that is taped to the side of the so-called bomb doesn't even have an alarm feature. So there's no way that it could even activate the bomb in the first place. So it's just like a clock.
This is like Clockboy level engineering here.
No, and based on what happened with Clockboy, maybe the guy just wanted a free trip to the White House.
Exactly.
Free electronics from Microsoft.
That's true. Yeah.
So maybe it was just a boomer that wanted free stuff and a tour of the White House. But you know, it's really weird that you had all these right before the election. We have hate hoax after hate hoax in this country, where you know every time that someone's painting a swastika or you know kicking over Holocaust survivor or not survivors, I guess the dead gravestones. It never ends up being an actual Nazi. And so I think you have the same kind of a situation here, where it's either maybe, you know, I'm not saying it's necessarily someone directly associated with the DNC or anything like that. We don't know who it was. And, you know, there still is the chance. Maybe it was just some really deranged right wing guy that, you know, had the worst idea he's ever had in his life and acted on it. But I think that it's, when this all comes to light, if it comes to light, a lot of the stuff just kind of gets memory holed, and, you know, already they're not talking about it. So, I mean, it could end up being, which, by the way, I think that's kind of interesting. The left is acting like somehow that getting mailed a clock with electrical tape wrapped around like a banana is the most violent thing in history, and it's definitely inspired by Trump. But when one leftist goes out and on a shooting spree, actually shoots congressmen and you know, Steve Scalise, it's like it never even happened. They never talk about that. They act like, oh no, even though he was a volunteer for the Bernie campaign, but you know, you never hear about that. It's like it never, in fact, well, I've talked to a lot of people, they don't even know that happened. And even that day, they showed just a little bit of footage, and we're talking like an act, you know, people were hit. It wasn't just like, oh, there's a guy that brought a gun to the Capitol. No, this guy like shot the place up and almost killed someone.
Yeah.
And put him in the hospital. And they had it that day. And I know this because I was doing, you know, pretty much daily video updates at the time, and never again was it talked about. So it's really kind of, I don't know. It's so obvious at this point. I guess it's kind of useless to point it out. Most people understand at this point that the left is really just a propaganda arm of, or the press is rather just the propaganda arm of the left. So,
yeah, they're so insincere, and they jump on this as a, you know, as a victim. And again, we haven't really gotten any clarification whether or not they actually were functioning devices. None of them went off. None of them, you know, there's these X-ray pictures of it, but it seems to just, I don't know, contain a wire and some, I don't know, some rice or something. And I don't know what it is. There's like no serious breakdown so far of that they actually were real bombs. So of course we have to it begs the question: is this for convenience sake? Were all these people who have been critical of Trump and Republicans, I guess, or that sphere, is that what they're targeted to seek these points and score points, right? I mean, the first one who got a package is George Soros, which is, of course, the kind of the to-go-to globalist, you know, that's kind of everyone knows about. And, of course, he deserves criticism, I'm not saying that, but there are far more people doing far more sinister things even than him, I would say. But he's a good target. He's a sensible target. And they've of course, been trying to kind of remedy that and salvage his reputation, I think, for some time. So to see him as a victim and to be able to say, Devin, that all these people that are obsessed with Soros and stuff, they're not only anti-Semites, they're violent, dangerous people that are sending bombs to people in the mail, right?
Well, and I think in a lot of ways they need to counteract this whole caravan thing where that's not a good look. You know, you have a lot of people that are, and rightfully so, concerned about these masses of people coming to the border right before the election. And I think that's causing a panic. Let's say that was, for whatever reason, something which I think, you know, leftist organizations are behind it. But I feel like it kind of didn't go the way they had planned, or it wasn't planned very well at all. And so they need an answer to that. They need to change the subject. They need to be like, hey, look how dangerous the right is. You know, they're sending people, they're unhinged. They're sending people bombs. And so it's a sympathy thing, but it's also, they're trying to paint the picture of the unhinged right winger, that Nazi that's lurking in the shadows wearing a MAGA hat and making a bomb out of a potato and an alarm clock, you know? So it's, I think this was a bad idea. No matter whoever came up with it, it was a bad idea. But the left is full of bad ideas, so you know you can't really put anything past them at this point.
And of course, they do blame Trump. I mean, although there's no evidence for this, some of the headlines that you've seen, we had actually one I can show quickly, a screenshot of Jeff Zucker, the CNN boss. He went after him basically saying that it's the White House. It's their rhetoric, right? This dangerous, that they've talked a little bit about the press. You know, Trump has brought attention to fake news and stuff like that. He says there's a total and complete lack of understanding at the White House about the seriousness of the continued attacks on the media. The president and especially the White House press secretary should understand their words matter. Thus far, they have shown no comprehension of that, right? Kind of implying it's really their fault. It's their rhetoric. That's why they link it up in that other piece I just showed you, that they're going after Trump because he's been critical of the media. And so they try to weave that into the story that it's like, this is dangerous. And on the flip side of that, media takes zero responsibility for hyping up things, for spreading lies and fake news. And I mean, the media literally gets nations into war. Like they have millions of people's blood on their hands, you know, like the Iraq war. And it was extremely few critical voices when the Iraq war started up and going into Afghanistan after 9/11. Everyone was rallying behind this, you know.
And they've never learned their lesson about that. I mean, even as recently as you know, the Syria stuff, where they're like, oh, it's another gas attack. Hurry, quick, shoot missiles at them. And so it's just one of the things you'll find if you look into the billionaires that own these media companies. There's a lot of ties with the billionaires that own arms and weapons companies. So that's part of it. There's also a revolving door, you'll notice, between a lot of the CIA, like Brennan and those types, between the CIA and the media and sitting on the boards of these weapons companies. So I think, honestly, at least in the last maybe longer than this, but at least 20 or so years, the media in a lot of ways are just kind of the left and the right are both guilty of this. But they're kind of the advertisers for weapons dealers. You know, if you need to sell weapons, you need to have a war that people are going to jump on board with. And you need to have the public okay with some of their sons getting their arms blown off and stuff like that. And that's, most people don't want to go to war. Most people don't want to go halfway around the world and shoot at people in the desert for no reason. And so they need the media to kind of rile people up, get them all pissed off about something, and I think we've seen them do that. I mean, there's some very famous examples I won't go into, but I think that's just, I mean, that's kind of part of their job.
Yeah, remember the drugs too, by the way, Afghanistan, right? The
Taliban?
Taliban, thank you, Taliban. I was going to say ISIS, but of course it's the Taliban in Afghanistan. And they had actually curbed some of the poppy, the opium production, right? But that's actually sky high since the U.S. went in there and took things over. And from a story from 2017, it says the opium production is through the roof. And, right. Of course, this is it's all by design. That's what I feel. This is meant to be, you know.
And it's not just heroin. You need a lot of that to make just the opioids.
The pharmaceuticals, so, exactly. Right. The Sackler family has been in trouble, of course, thankfully, very recently. Not nearly enough, but you're right. It's all tied into the drugging of people. With the wars, you can drive migration into the Western world. You benefit from the war, from the money sold, the weapons, the drugs. There's too many positive things for the elite, right. You know, to let this one go, you know?
And they're like the Native Americans, how we use every part of the animal. That's what they do, is they create a conflict, and they'll find every little way that they can somehow benefit off of it, how they can profit off of it. And you'll see who these contracts go to, and it's some bad stuff. I mean, and then of course there's also the whole organ trafficking market, you know, that I think we need to dig deeper into. I've touched on it a little bit, but there's definitely, I mean, they've found bodies in Syria, like missing hearts, and there's been the footage that went around the internet where no one still knows where that even came from, where they're literally extracting organs from children that they stole from a war zone. And so, I think they found out that it was Indonesia or something. But so you have a lot of these horrible people, basically these sociopaths that are just trying to squeeze every drop of profit out of a war. And they don't care. They really don't care. In fact, in some ways, I think a lot of these people, they still subscribe to this whole, oh, the world's overpopulated kind of nonsense that was really hip to the boomer generation. And so in a lot of ways, they think they're doing the world a favor by knocking down the numbers of the world population. And they're like, well, as long as we got to do it, might as well get really rich off it at the same time. So we're talking about like really evil
people. Yeah, I remember too, like there was accusations by, here's a Belgian official that mentioned that Israel was stealing organs from Palestinian kids when they had killed them, and even when they hadn't killed them. There was a controversy in Sweden back in 2009, the paper Aftonbladet, there was a journalist that accused Israel of the same thing. And this is a repeated theme that's kept coming up, actually, that whenever they do get it, the opportunity, they actually steal and have this black market of organs from kids. You know, it's amazing.
Well, in South America, I forget which country, there was just a couple weeks ago, same kind of a story where they busted a couple of Israelis that were organ harvesting. I think it might have been Argentina.
Jeez.
But you know, so it's the sort of thing that people don't even think about it because it's so outside of their day-to-day lives, the fact that there's people out there stealing organs from people. I mean, it sounds crazy because you have to be a really sick individual to even think of that as a good thing to do. And so it's kind of like with the pedophilia problem that we have in the elite class, where a lot of people have a hard time swallowing that. They have a hard time like, oh, that can't be real. Because it's so way outside of their normal day-to-day life, it just sounds too crazy to be true. But this stuff's true. And, of course, you know, the last people that are going to tell you about it are the media, because the media are tied into the exact same people. So
yep.
It's a vicious cycle. That's why they need to shut us down, because, you know, for the first time maybe in history with the internet, the way that it is, and with just the average person able to create a YouTube channel or even just a Twitter feed, information's getting out to humans in a way that it's never been possible before.
Yeah, I mean, the printing press didn't allow for any level of this. It was only for very, you know, elite people, the right people. It went straight to the Bible, pretty much being the printed document of choice, and that, sure, that there was a distribution of that. People could actually read the Bible for those who could read, instead of going to their pastor and getting the interpretation from them. So I understand the benefit at that time and the value to it. But this is like, it's never been easier to publish something and to get your thoughts out there. And when these algorithms on these sites were fair, if you know what I mean, then anybody's content, anybody's comment, anybody's hot take on any topic would and could be the one that just exploded out there, right? And this the truth bomb, right? That could just have been delivered on any topic, right? I know it's cheesy, but I'm just kind of making fun of it a little bit. Which is a good thing, of course. We want the truth to get out. We want people's opinions to get out there and be out there. But now it feels like that door is closing, Devin, that the Wild West, that was the greatest experience, if you will, of the internet, of the freedom that existed there, is slowly but surely closing up. And I didn't think that they would be able to do it, to be honest, on one level, because it was so, like, there's so many sites, there's so much, different ways you can do it. But when you see the shutting down of domain names and the refusal of services to the wrong think crowd and stuff like that, you just like, I guess you get black pilled to use your name there.
No, and it's true. Maybe there'll be new technologies that come, like a lot of the whole idea of decentralization, I think, will get bigger. Not just like in terms of cryptocurrency, but also just in decentralized networks. In a way, that's kind of how BitChute works, with the torrents and stuff like that. I think that's, you're going to see more of that as that technology matures. And also that kind of a network requires more bandwidth to some degree. So, as the technology, the hardware gets better, but they'll keep finding ways of shutting it down. Ultimately, what they want is, and this is both sides of the aisle in Washington, this isn't just the Democrats. Both sides of the aisle want the internet to be curated. They don't want a YouTube. They want a ThemTube. They want, it's the same. They want their four networks back. They just want it on the internet now. Like, you can still watch, ABC, CNN, CBS, PBS, but you just have to watch it on your phone now. We'll put it on your phone.
And then they have these like kind of edgy things that they promote on YouTube now, like the Kevin Nealon show, they're out walking and selfie style, and they have Will Smith has his channel. I mean, YouTube is basically turning into a mainstream shit show again, which is like what no one wanted on YouTube. What was great about YouTube is that creativity of all the people who didn't have the means to have these big TV shows. And then, like, we make something great out of it because that's what we did, right? Everyone collectively that made videos and stuff. And now, like, the mainstream culture and all these narcissists are like a parasite on this thing and, like, want to get in there and take it over and just, like, smear their shit all over the place. It's annoying, right? It is annoying.
No, it's the same problem with YouTube, like, in terms of making a competitor. I mean, YouTube's never made money either. YouTube's never been
profitable. So I hear. Yeah, so I hear.
So it's, I don't even know how BitChute's doing it. I'm sure they don't have ads or anything, and they don't charge for anything, so I don't know how they're staying alive. But that's the kind of thing. It's almost impossible to compete with them in any meaningful way unless you're a billionaire. So at the end of the day, we're kind of at the mercy of billionaires. This whole idea that used to be kind of a leftist idea of, the tyranny of the 1%, really has, I think, crossed over. It's kind of funny. It's a little bit weird. A lot of these people that would have been kind of protesting for these Occupy Wall Street things that were going on not that long ago are the same people who are essentially robots for these mega corporations. And now it's the right, or at least the dissident right, that's saying, hey, we don't want these billionaires controlling what we see, controlling what we know, and, buying politicians. And it's the left now that is defending the status quo, defending the establishment. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I don't think it's going to be the smoothest road ever. But I haven't totally given up hope, but I recommend to all my viewers that, and again, I'm not hoping for this, but, hope for the best, prepare for the worst, make sure you have lots of, food supplies and things like that. If things go south, that you're set to survive something, because I don't see how this The other thing is, too, the country is so polarized at this point. I don't see how you come together on anything. I mean, it's no
especially
longer
as it's getting more and more racially diverse.
Right.
People don't speak the same languages. I mean, it's literally being pulled apart. And the more people from other cultures and foreign incompatible cultures you bring in, what president ever is going to be able to unify all those different ideas and aspirations and what, you know, how do they want to live their lives and all the diversity really that exists, and they say diversity is a strength, but in this case it's already provable, but I'm saying America as an experiment in diversity is going to be proven that it is going to fail and pull the country apart, you know?
No, and that's kind of the thing is, without a unified national identity. See, it used to be, before this whole diversity experiment that has failed epically, it used to be you still had kind of a right and a left, but the average population, what unified them is they kind of wanted the same things out of life. They just had different roads to get there. And now they don't even want the same things. So it's not a matter of, oh, well, I think, you know, bigger government will create this utopia that we both agree on. And, oh, you think smaller government will do it. It's like, no, these people on this side want to burn the Constitution and, you know, get rid of the right to bear arms, get rid of free speech. They're communists at this point. The left is just outright communist. They're not even trying to really hide it anymore. And, the right, you know, the establishment sucks. The establishment is basically, you know, Democrats 20 years ago. And, so they're in a lot of ways, they kind of want it too. They want, because they're at the top, right? So anyone who's at the top of the establishment doesn't mind gigantic government because that's just more toys for them to play with. That's more power for them. So we're kind of screwed. You know, that's kind of why Trump got elected. You had a lot of people kind of looking at the way things were going and they just saw Trump as Michael Moore put it, the human hand grenade that people wanted to throw into Washington and see what would happen. And, you know, he's delivered in some ways, but he's, say what you want about Trump, the cultural things that he's done have been really good, but at the end of the day, he's one of them. He's part of the elite class. He's a billionaire.
Sure.
He gets funded by, you know, a lot of these same people that were funding the Bushes, that were funding the Clintons. I mean, there's a lot of crossover, and people I don't think realize that. So
one thing I quickly want to bring up to your comment about like criticizing, you know, billionaires and stuff like that, which I think is a really good point, and why more people on the right have begun to kind of take over that role as leftists has pulled back. And you see articles like this, right, where they Daily Beast is totally fanatical. This guy, even the author Spencer Ackerman, Aukerman, I guess, he has written articles basically just totally like defending, you know, like Antifa and stuff like that, and just, oh, it's good that they're out there. And even one of the articles he co-wrote with another author there over at the Daily Beast was about how the military didn't see a threat with Antifa, so therefore it's kind of, they're okay. They're like being, you know, they're not there's not a threat to the military. They had a report. It's fine. Just let it go kind of thing. But anyway, so in that vein, they know that the George Soros, of course, are they're on their side, the multimillionaires, the big companies. It's their guys. They're the vehicles by which internationalism, liberalism, progressivism, leftism is being just thrusted upon the Western world, and so they are forced to defend these guys, despite the fact that they are the upper class, they are the multimillionaires, they are the bankers. The Soros is literally the kind of guy who buys up currency when it's weak to help crash the whole country's economy and stuff like that. It happened both in England and in Sweden. I mean, if there are any big villain millionaires out there, it's Soros. But then you get stuff like this. It's like, well, criticizing him is anti-Semitism, and Hungary is bad because they have posters out on the street about how George Soros as NGOs is disruptive to Hungary's culture, you know, like stuff like that. It's hilarious, you know?
Yeah, and that, you know, this might get me in a little bit of trouble. People need to get over this whole, if you criticize anything Jewish, you're anti-Semitic. They need to get over it. And I think it's a generational thing, because you got to think of it this way. Boomers, their parents literally, you know, shot Nazis. And they were propagandized a lot during World War II, obviously, to not only hate the Nazis, because that's who the government was at war with, but also they were propagandized, let's take in all these, the Jews that were fleeing Europe at the time, let's take in all these immigrants. And then, of course, you have the media talking about how horrible the Holocaust was 24/7, my entire lifetime. Stuff like Schindler's List and things like that. So you have boomers that from cradle to grave, have been basically, romanticizing Jewish people and they have a visceral reaction to anything critical of anyone Jewish. And part of that's because just the term anti-Semitism exists. I mean, no other race has a magic word. It's just racism when it's, you know, when it's black people or white people or Mexicans or whatever. But for whatever reason, there's like a special word if you criticize Jewish people. So I think that you have the boomers that are really kind of, they've got this, propaganda, this baggage, whatever you want to call it. And, as a result, there's got to be cultural implications in the Jewish community too. I mean, if you're never getting criticized, I mean, you got to think of it this way. It's like those women that are really good looking and no one ever calls them out because they're hot. And so, and then when they grow up and they get old and no one thinks they're hot anymore, they just think everyone's being mean to them and they can't figure out what changed. And it's because you're not walking around in a world where everyone wants to have sex with you 24/7 anymore. Nothing changed.
That's when they joined the Me Too movement, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I kind of feel like as a that's going to have a cultural impact on wealthy Jews as well. If you are a member of a group that just criticizing you is taboo, I mean, how much self-policing is going to go on? You know, like,
this is literally how they treat Soros, that of all the proof that exists out there of how disruptive he is in terms of meddling, real meddling here, folks, not just some Russian ghost, you know, exactly. He's wanted in Hungary. He's meddling in countries. He bypasses it by using NGOs, right? So it's kind of, you know, not really official business. It's just like there to influence. And of course you have, you know, you can extend this to other maybe former, Russian oligarchs, you know, like the Berezovskis and stuff like that too, that were like involved in like the Orange Revolution in Ukraine and the Rhodes Revolution in Georgia. And this, you know, it just goes on and on. The former, satellite states of the Soviet Union, that NATO and the West and these oligarchs, these, Russian mafia people have been trying to shift and turn, to be an enemy of Russia, right? That's real meddling. I mean, that is real meddling, but they're defending this as saying, if you criticize Soros, You're an anti-Semite, and that's just how they shut down the conversation. And again, now they can equate it with this idea that you're also one of those guys that want to send bombs to them, right? So that's why this is so perfect for them. That despite the fact that none of the bombs exploded, we don't even know if they were capable of doing so. It's irrelevant. They've jumped on this. They're going to use this scenario to say having this kind of rhetoric is actually dangerous. And here's the kicker. I think what's going to happen with the conversations online is that it's going to be these big companies, social media companies, and I guess just the mainstream media too overall, in terms of comment sections and stuff like that, are basically going to say they're going to have a couple of preset criteria that if you talk about either certain maybe individuals or if you criticize the wrong group or something like that, they're going to just say, well, this is language that is going to lead to violence or enable violence, and therefore we're going to shut it down, right? So there's going to be a total restriction and a narrowing of the opinions that's going to be able to be voiced online. That's where I think that this is going.
Well, and it's going to have the opposite effect. That's what they don't – well, maybe they understand and they just don't care. I don't see why they wouldn't care, but it's going to have the opposite effect. Anytime you make a subject taboo, you make it something that – I mean, just think about in a personal relationship. If there's a subject that there's a sore spot about – you're not allowed to talk about it. It's just going to sit there and fester and fester and fester until one day you blow up and, you know, you have a big fight or, and whatever. Now that works in the macro as well. You're going to have, if there's legitimate criticisms about a member of a certain group or a certain group, and you're just never allowed to talk about it, and it's just this big off-limit subject, and we kind of saw this, we've seen this already. It's kind of the sort of things that led to Trump. It's just going to have, it's going to push it into the shadows, and it's going to fester and grow, and it's something that could be talked out and resolved peacefully, but because you're not allowed to even talk about it, it's going to drive people to the extremes. And so it's really kind of frustrating to watch it happen, because this is the sort of thing that can be resolved peacefully if we can just talk, we can speak honestly about it. But it's just, I don't see it going that way. I mean, I made a video recently where all I did was I pointed out that Al Jolson, who popularized blackface, was Jewish. And not only was he Jewish, but the movie that he used, it was one of the first movies ever. It was called The Jazz Singer. It was made in 1927. And he popularized blackface in this film. It was one of the first movies ever to have audio. In fact, half of it's silent and the other half's audio, because it was like that. It was on the bleeding edge of audio technology and films. And so all I did is I pointed out, hey, look, this movie is literally about Jewish identity. Like in the movie, his dad's a rabbi. There's this whole conflict about, oh, you know, should I sing in the synagogue or should I sing in blackface in the theater? And I was like, you know, this is something a lot of people don't know. This is something that's always laid at the feet of, you know, the Anglo-Saxons of America, that somehow we're the evil racists that wear blackface, but you never hear about this aspect of it. And I was really fair about it. I didn't sit there and go, oh, those dirty Jews and their blackface. You know what I mean? Like, it was really kind of even-handed, I thought. Yeah, and there's the video there. And so, and I got such a vile response from so many people freaking out, and it's because so it's like,
I didn't actually know this. I didn't know that about Al Jolson.
Check out this video. I dissect the movie and I talk about it. It's not just kind of Jewish. It's like literally the whole movie is Al Jolson's dad is a rabbi that's called like a cantor or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he sings and he grows up in this Jewish family and he runs away from home because his dad beats him up. And then he gets old, starts doing the blackface stuff, and he goes back home because his parents live in New York in the Jewish part of town, and he's going to be in town for a Broadway play, or this actually, the video we're watching right now, this is when he's on Broadway, and that was the woman that he showed as his mom, and they kind of reconcile. But the whole thing is literally about, I mean, not only is it literally about him being Jewish and his Jewish identity, they twice in the film he expresses two separate times that he sees himself as racially different than whites. Like in the very beginning of the film, the very very beginning of the film, they say like, oh yes, it's our Jewish race, and like I don't remember the exact wording. It's in my video, and then the very end, same thing, like right before he goes out because his dad gets sick or something like that, and he's trying to figure out if he should go visit his dad and sing at the synagogue or sing on Broadway. And again, he does like this big speech about, oh, the voice of my race is calling to me. I'm going to have to go sing at the synagogue. Or, you know, again, I don't remember the exact wording. But it's not just, oh, he happened to be a Jewish. And the actor, of course, is Jewish. The producers were Jewish, the director was Jewish, the writer was Jewish. Pretty much everyone involved in the making of that film was Jewish. It was a very Jewish thing. And you never hear about criticisms of Jews. They're involved, well, usually in general, but like specifically, of course, you never hear criticism about the Jews' involvement with blackface and the popularization of that. I don't know if you'd call it an art form, but you know what I mean? But of blackface. And just by pointing that out, by doing a video about it, I received a lot of people, a lot of angry people commenting and messaging me on Gab and on Twitter, you know, calling me a Nazi and stuff like that, just because.
As usual.
You know, shut
your mouth. But it points to a good thing. This is a thing, or an important note, shall we say, in terms of the historical accuracy of this, that today, of course, it's white people to get blamed for this. And,
right.
And they have to take the hits for this. And in this case, I guess this, I didn't know this. This should be one of those things I should have looked up because I'm interested in these kinds of questions and see, you know, pick deeper behind this kind of stuff. So that this is a very interesting revelation to me. But of course, I gotta say, it's like makes sense, right? Of course, this is what happens because.
And that kind of illustrates how hidden it is. The fact that you didn't know because it's like, I didn't know. And the only reason I knew was, I've been reviewing films and I decided to try to find one of the oldest movies I could look at and I saw, blackface. I was like, oh, this is weird. I've never watched a blackface movie before. And I was just sitting there with my jaw open, just like, wow, this is like the most Jewish movie I've ever seen in my life. I had no idea that it was like this.
And of course, this is a good segue over to, let's talk about this before we wrap up. We're going to wrap up our first segment here a little bit in just a few minutes. And I do want you to plug, actually your book before we wrap up the first segment too. But just quickly then, let's talk about Megyn Kelly. Because this perfect segue over to this issue of blackface, right? She had to listen to her. So she basically she said it's okay to have blackface for Halloween. I did that when I was a kid, right? That's what she said. And so then she did her the day after. She got super much flack on Twitter, and oh my God! So here's the apology, the cringy apology, guys. For those of you who haven't seen it, let's take a look.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Megyn Kelly, and I want to begin with two words. I'm sorry. You may have heard that yesterday we had a discussion here about political correctness and Halloween costumes. And that conversation turned to whether it is ever okay for a person of one race to dress up as another. A black person making their face lighter or a white person making theirs darker to make a costume complete. I defended the idea, saying as long as it was respectful and part of a Halloween costume, it seemed okay. Well, I was wrong, and I am sorry. One of the great parts of sitting in this chair each day is getting to discuss different points of view.
And also getting $83,000 per episode, by the way.
Talk, and sometimes I listen. And yesterday I learned. I learned that given the history of blackface being used in awful ways by racists in this country, it is not okay.
I think she just was anti-Semitic just then.
She was, exactly.
Or otherwise. I have never been a PC kind of person. But I do understand the value in being sensitive to our history, particularly on race and ethnicity. This past year has for many people of color. The country feels so divided, and I have no wish to add to that pain and offense. I believe this is a time for more understanding, more love, more sensitivity, and honor. And I want to be part of that. Thank you for listening. And for helping me.
Please don't fire me.
Too. Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. Standing ovations here, right? Because she did
tears.
Yeah, she literally has tears. Oh my God, look at this. It's
she's
so
thinking
pathetic.
About money. That's 100% thing.
Exactly. Oh my God. What are we going to do with that $83,000 per episode that I'm making? Five.
Oh my God.
It's a lot of money. She makes a lot of money. It's amazing. But anyway, so, you know. She's groveling. She should have stood her ground, as usual, and just said, you know what, it's not offensive. We're all dressing up. It's all good fun. There's plenty of blacks that have dressed up as whites, and they do movies about that, Two White Chicks, or whatever the hell it's called, and it keeps coming, right? And I'm okay with it. It's just, if everyone wants to do it, it's fine, you know?
I was Mr. T for Halloween one year, and I totally painted myself black.
There you go. Oopsie daisy.
And it wasn't like a big deal. Like, I mean, this was years ago, but I went out in public, and there were black people that saw me and thought it was funny. You know, like it wasn't like a thing. So where we are now is that's the thing is the polarization. You know, it's just been my entire life. I thought we had things figured out like in the 90s.
Nope.
Something happened.
And of course, just for those of you who don't know then, reports say here that Megyn Kelly's, is it the Today Show she hosts? Anyway, it's canceled. Following this controversy, it didn't matter that she begged for forgiveness and said, I'm wrong. I have educated myself. Remember the astronaut? Same thing just two weeks ago. Isn't his name Kelly, too, by the way? The American astronaut that's up there?
Isn't the guy, like the husband of that the woman, that the congresswoman that got shot?
Is that what it is? I'm not sure. We can look it up.
Remember.
But he anyway used this Churchill quote, and he was vehemently attacked, like by hundreds of people, and he had to tweet back, like, I'm sorry, I'll educate. Everyone's like, he was behind genocide, and Churchill killed the Indians, and, you know, stuff like that. It just went on and on, and he just backpedaled and just like, whoa, what's happening? I didn't mean to. I'll educate myself immediately on his racism. You know, repent, repent. But the point is, it doesn't matter. It doesn't help. And the more people back down to this kind of bullshit, I mean, Halloween, it's literally if we look at some of the origins of that, it's literally the idea to dress up, to play different characters and roles. There's even a tradition in Swiss society, which is called, I think, is called Fachnacht, which is like a, where they dress up a kind of like a character and kind of play out a character that they like or something like that. It's like a kind of a steam valve function within some societies that seems to need that kind of stuff. And I don't know if that's necessary or not in American society, but regardless, it has this basis in like, it's fun, people play different characters, and no one anywhere would ever have been in the past offended for someone wanting to dress up as anything or be anything, you know what I mean? And it's just this oversensitivity that, you know, why is it wrong, why is this wrong when everyone can, of course, culturally appropriate, Devin, anything from white culture or white characters, or why don't they react like this when there's like a black character in Beowulf or in, playing Queen Anne in Britain or something like that, right?
That's because just like our countries, white culture belongs to everyone. See, that's the thing that I think a lot of people are missing is that's really how these people look at it. I mean, why do you think they feel like they have not just the privilege but the right to come to white countries? I mean, it's the way that the world, I don't know how we got to this point. I wish I did. But for whatever reason, the way that the world views, these, or white culture and just pretty much everything white belongs to everyone else. Maybe where it comes from is they feel like, oh, it's white people got that by being imperialists and stealing from everyone else. And so now they must eternally pay back that debt. I don't know how they're justifying it in their head, but there's no denying that there seems to be this feeling that everything white belongs to the world, and that it doesn't, it doesn't swing both ways. So it's, and that's a problem. And part of it too, the reason that keeps going is white people don't have pride that they don't disagree with that viewpoint, I guess, largely. I mean, there's obviously people that do, but there's a huge majority, I would say, sadly, of white people that kind of just go along with it. So.
Yep, it's true. It's absolutely crazy. We're going to continue this conversation here in part two at redicemembers.com. If you guys want to join us there, definitely check it out. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for a membership. That's the best way to help us out and support us and ensuring that we can continue doing the show and bypassing all the censorship and, of course, the banning. We've never were enabled in terms of ads on the website or on YouTube or anything like that. We never went that route. Anyway, quickly before we end, though, the first part, Devin, tell us about the website. Quickly tell us about the book. We can definitely go into more detail in the book in the second segment. But what should people know? It's a novel, actually. So it's about a story, more stories. I heard you mention, I think it was in an interview, you talked about the advantage of writing fictional tales. Just briefly tell us about that.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is, I think the right doesn't have a lot of fiction. And I think that, the right loves to say, oh, the left can't meme. And they don't realize there's entire leftist meme industries. The film industry is the leftist meme industry. In fact, I bet everyone that has said the left can't meme has paid money to go look at a leftist meme. And they've got merchandising, they've got the film industry, all the merchandise that goes along with that, all the hero worship that goes along with that. You have the music industry, which is largely leftist propaganda as well. You have books for the most part, a lot of literature. There's not a lot of right-wing literature. And so I got it into my head. I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, but I mean, I come from, I have a film background, and I was like, I'd like to make a film, but try to get a right-wing movie funded. So I was like, I could write a book if it fails, it's not a big deal. It's not something that I dragged a bunch of people in, you know, to help on, and then it failed, and, you know, it's all on me if it sucks. And if it works well, I can just do it again. So I wrote The Day of the Rope, which is available on Amazon, at least for right now. They've been banning books, so, you know, who knows how much longer it'll be up there. It was kind of an experiment, to be honest. I wasn't sure how well it'll do, but the response has been really good, and I'm trying to get the audiobook posted as well. I know a lot of people are interested in the audiobook, especially because I actually read the first chapter on my channel, so you can listen to the first chapter and see if you want to check out the rest of the book. And I'll be doing the full audiobook should be out soon. It's just the company I was working with to get that out got bought out by Amazon right while I was doing everything, and it kind of created some speed bumps. But I'll have that out as soon as I possibly can. And it's been way more successful than I thought it would be. And I think that's something that the right needs to consider, is that we can make fiction. You know, we're not limited to just doing, talking about the current events and talking about philosophy. I mean, that stuff's really important too, obviously. But you got to look at the way that the left has, kind of, in a way, you could say, socially engineered a lot of their greatest achievements. They would meme about for decades before it actually happened, you know? So you'd see them, you know, in their television shows and in their movies broadcast whatever social norm social thing they wanted to turn into a norm, way before it became a norm. And it took decades and patience, but they eventually got what they wanted. And I don't think the right thinks like that. And, for whatever reason. And so I think that that's something that we need to explore, and that's something that that I've tried doing here. And so if you want some right-wing fiction, you can check out Day of the Rope. It's, like I said, it's got good reviews, and I'm kind of proud of it, and there will be a sequel.
Yeah, book one, it says. So how many in the series? Three?
Depends on how. I mean, my original plan was, to be perfectly honest, if this totally bombs, it'll just be one. But I was thinking like it'd be a trilogy, but we'll see. Like if there's more story to tell by the time I get to the third book, you know, maybe there'll be a fourth one. But I think a trilogy would do. I'm a big fan of, when I was a kid, I really liked Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was a trilogy, but then he did like a fourth one just for no reason, I think. So that's kind of like the way I see it, is I'll do a trilogy, and then if it needs another one, I'll do another one.
All right.
But
cool.
It's time consuming. That's the thing. It's really hard to do, to run your YouTube channel, and I still work. I still do work, you know, to pay the rent. And then, you know, writing a book on top of that, and then trying to at least scrape out something of a social life out of all of this. And, yeah. It gets difficult, but like I said, we were talking about earlier, by demonetizing my videos, which they do on a regular basis, it's also something that I wanted to have work, because it would be another way I could get some income coming in to help me, you know, continue with the channel, because I really want to do it full time, and that's something that's on the horizon. And I want to thank my Patreon contributors. They've really stepped up. It's been slowly climbing up, so not quite where I need to be yet, but I think I'll get there, and I can start doing this full time, be putting out more videos, putting out more books, and just trying to put out as much content as we can, because there might come a day where they shut us all down. And so I want to have shot as many shots across the bow as possible before we go down. So,
yeah, I agree. You know, I agree.
That's all we can do.
Yeah, we have to fight. The line in Lord of the Rings, the elves, they're outnumbered. They know they're going to lose, but the only thing they know how to do and what they should do is to fight. And that's kind of where we are right now. I think our numbers are increasing. I think we are gaining a lot of ground, but as we've gained a lot of ground, taking two steps forward, we're now taking kind of one step back, I see, a little bit, in terms of how the corporate liberal world order is kind of fighting back, really, against true dissidents and critics. But anyway, we'll continue to talk more about this and some of the other current news folks, that's happened as well here in the last couple of days. Some important stories we want to get to in the second segment as well, so definitely check that out. But again, in the meantime, check out the book, Day of the Rope. It's on Amazon. We'll have a link to that. Then, of course, blackpilled.com. That's the main website for Devin. And we'll have a link to the YouTube channel by the same name as well up. But, interesting discussion. Thank you for the first part. We'll take a short break, and then we'll be right back with more.